You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
The Chicago Bears fell to 6-11 after blowing a lead to the Minnesota Vikings in the last game of the season. I bring on Bear Report and Windy City Gridiron Zone Aaron Lemming to break down the ups and downs of the game with me and talk through what could be coming in the next couple weeks on this episode of Bear With Me. What's going on, everybody, and welcome back to Bear With Me, a Chicago Bears podcast hosted by yours truly, Robert Schmitz, right here on the Windy City Gridiron Podcasting Network. And I'm here with both the Bear Report and also Windy City Gridiron's Aaron Lemming, who you joined me early on in the season, Aaron. I felt like it was fitting to bring you on to close it as the Bears go from up 14-0, seemingly dancing on the line or on the Vikings, to 21 unanswered points and an emphatic end to the Matt Nagy era, which it is the end of the Matt Nagy era, right?
Yeah, it has to be, man. Yeah, that was, kind of like we're talking about right before we started recording it. Could there have been a more fitting end? You know, I'm sitting there thinking, I was like, man, they're going to win this game. Draft position is going to be a little bit different. You know, people are going to start getting a little crazy, you know, feelings in their head, thinking they won three straight games and maybe this team isn't as bad as we thought. It's like, okay, you know, now back down to reality. They go in, they were up 14-0 at one point, almost in the halftime. They're up 14-0. You look at the final score, 31-17. And once again, they got in the Vikings territory six times. What do? They came away with 17 points. It's just the same broken record, man. I mean, luckily, I think we're done living it. But thank God the season's over with.
Honestly, Aaron, I thought it was hilarious because to your point, I mean, they're up 14-0, which is big in any NFL setting, but especially when you're Chicago. But the wild part is that they had to bounce off of so many walls to get there, right? Like, they failed on a couple of fourth downs, which more on that later, am I right? But mm-hmm. they got to the red zone, I think you said it, five, maybe six times, got one touchdown that I still can't believe the Vikings left open. Like, don't get me wrong, every defense makes mistakes, every defense blows coverages, but Damian Williams leaking out that open felt like making it a little too easy for Andy Dalton. If I was a Vikings fan, I'm not, though. So I'll point out the massive amount of Matt Nagy 4th-and-1 pass calls, which eventually came to bite them in the butt really hard. I think it was 3 4th-and-1s, 3 pass plays, 2 sacks for a loss of 29, and a pick 6 at the end of the day. I mean, the Bears offense technically had given them the lead, but to your point, it's not like they were playing ultra efficient football to kick off the day, and it ended up that they needed those points for the later part of the game and just didn't have them.
Yeah, I mean, as a whole, they had 4 fourth down, 4 failed fourth, well, I guess 5, but we won't count the other one because that was, you know, meaningless,
fourth
you know,
and 19.
Check down at the end of the game. Yeah, but yeah, they have 4 in the, you know, and when the game actually mattered, right? They have 4 of those. They were 0 for 4. All 4 of those were passes. 3 of those ended in sacks for 35 yards, and there was a pick 6. And, you know, but it just kind of goes back to show you that once again, it was just a situation in which the Bears don't learn. Matt Nagy doesn't learn. It's the same thing over and over. You got David Montgomery losing his mind on the sidelines because he's sitting there on the sidelines as a 4th-and-1 is happening, as he's your best offensive weapon. It's just, again, man, I don't know that there's a more fitting way for this to end, for the Bears season to end, for Matt Nagy's tenure to end with the Bears. Hopefully Ryan Pace's tenure, but I guess we'll have to, you know, we'll figure that out at some point in time. But there's just no better way to end a season than how it happened today.
I mean, talking about how it's the perfect way to end the Nagy era, totally spot on, especially considering that starting in 2018, sure, but I feel like this got really obvious in 2019 that Matt Nagy will be, that you've seen Princess Bride, right? He's absolutely the villain at the end, going, well, so I'm thinking that I'll do this, but because you think that I'll do this, I would think to do this, but then you'll think that you're that I'm going to realize that, so I'm actually, I mean, Matt Nagy at one point, I think it was one of the early 4th-and-1s, ran a fake mesh play that the Vikings, I don't think, thought too hard about what the Bears were going to do on 4th-and-1, because they weren't fooled when Cole Kmet, and I don't remember who the other crosser was, didn't cross, and instead snagged back outwards, and Dalton just sat there looking at the rest or looking at nobody open and said, what am I supposed to do with this?
Well, it's the same exact thing that happened 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago when they played him. It was literally the same exact story. Get in the Vikings territory, they ratchet up their defense, the Bears can't score points. It's just the same thing over and over, and it was the same thing too, because it looked like the Vikings knew what they were going to do every single time the last time around too. I don't even know. Let me just say this, right? I think, you know, everything I've heard about Matt Nagy, I think Matt Nagy's a really good dude. I definitely wish success for him down the road. You know, obviously things started off pretty well and have not gone very well. I have nothing personally against Matt Nagy at all. But I think and I hope for his sake that he learns a lot about his 4 years in Chicago and how you're supposed to build each year, right? He talked about that in the very beginning. You're supposed to build each year. And what it came down to was him basically scrambling to figure out what the problem was year after year, game after game after game. And I hope he can learn something and try to figure out. I mean, really, one, he's not an offensive play caller. And really, he probably shouldn't even be, in my opinion, I don't even think it should be his offense that's being run. But I hope that he's able to learn. He's still a young dude. I mean, I hope he's able to learn from all this. I hope he eventually gets another shot. With all that being said, though, I am beyond relieved that this is the end of the Matt Nagy era, and hopefully better things come down the line, because I don't know that I can watch incompetent offensive football in Chicago for too much longer, man. It's so painful year and year, same. Year and year, never ends.
Well, and one thing that I've seen the chat bring up while we've had this podcast, Aaron, that comes to mind, and God forbid, I don't want to step out of line and say something stupid, but for the sake of beginning discussion, Aaron, it is wild when you look at head coaching around the NFL, how often a head coach is hired from one side of the ball, say an offensive head coach, right? And then the offense immediately goes in the tank, right? Vic Fangio, a defensive head coach, obviously, his defense is largely the problem. Mike Vrabel in Tennessee hasn't been able to get the defense really fixed until, say, this year, and Nagy's offense never got off the ground. It does make me wonder when it comes to the next head coaching hire, and I'm really just postulating, I'm not even thinking about anybody in particular, Aaron, how much it comes down to how much maybe we overrate a head coach's background, right? That John Fox, to use him as an example, yeah, he was terrible in Chicago, especially once he brought Danger Zone Loggins on end to do offensive coordination. But Fox seemed to be a clear delegator and kept his team out of nasty penalties, false starts, and the procedural penalties that we've seen just ripple throughout the Nagy era. And it does make me curious as far as when the next like head coach is eventually hired, whether background should be as important as sometimes I think we like to make it, picking out whether it's Kellen Moore, Josh McDaniels, Byron Leftwich, Brian Daboll. We act as if that offensive head coach is going to bring their offense over, but it does seem like there's a lot of situations here where it's not the background of the coach that ends up being the shining piece of the team. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, and I mean, to add to your point, Dan Quinn was the same way in Atlanta. We watched, what was it, the first year or two, their defense was pretty solid, but then it ended up turning into their defense was absolutely awful and their offense was the one doing things. And a lot of that, I think, had to do with the fact that he inherited Matt Ryan and all those pieces on the offense. Yeah, I think what's going to get lost in this head coaching search is they need the best overall head coach, right? And I know that some people have got the preferences, whether they want to go, whether they want to go offensive, whether they want to go defensive. You have other people who want to go first time, you know, second time, or even, you know, a college guy. And I think really what it's going to come
down
to.
You can say the college guy's name out loud, Aaron. Everybody knows who you're thinking
of. Well, but I don't even think it's just Harbaugh, though, because Harbaugh's at least proven that he can do it. My bigger issue is with a guy like Ryan Day, where if you look at the overall within the last 30, 35, 40 years, if you look at the overall success rate of college football coaches that have never coached in the NFL and they come in, the success rate is very, very, very small. And I think that's something that a lot of people are forgetting. I mean, we're seeing the same thing with Matt Rhule. Obviously, you know, it's a little bit different with a guy like Cliff Kingsbury, but this is the first time that he's had any sort of success as well. So, you know, really what it comes down to in the research that I've done, and Jack from Windy City Gridiron has actually done a great job with one of his articles and kind of helping out some of my research, is it seems like the first time guys definitely have more success. I think the one thing that really almost guarantees you no success and no Super Bowl would be hiring a coach that has already won a Super Bowl. There's never been a coach in the history of the league that has won a Super Bowl. At least I should take that back. I don't think that there is a coach in the history of the league that has won a Super Bowl with one team and been able to do it with somebody else. I could be wrong on that. And if I am, it's like, it's very, 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 very small. But the success rate, because that's obviously how you're going to weigh everything, right? Is you're going to look at it and say, okay, you know, can this guy get to the Super Bowl? And if this guy can get to the Super Bowl, can they win it? And if you look at that, just that alone, the first-time candidates are the better of the three when you're looking at, you know, first-time guy versus, you know, second-time retread for a guy that hasn't won a Super Bowl versus, you know, the college guys. So that's at least worth keeping in mind. My next thing, and I'm hoping to get to this over the next few days, is kind of figuring out offensive and defensive backgrounds, because I think if you look at a lot of the guys in the NFL right now that are having a lot of sustained success, a lot of them actually have a defensive background, and even some of them have special teams background. Obviously, John Harbaugh is one of those guys. So, yeah, I think you're right. I think that fans and the Bears as a whole would be smart to kind of weigh each option. I know always the argument is going to be, well, if you hire a defensive guy, then how can you guarantee that you're going to be able to keep an offensive mind there and blah, 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 blah. We see it all the time, man. A lot of these, I mean, look at Bill Belichick. You know, obviously he's more of an outlier than anybody, but look at a lot of these defensive coaches that have had success. They have found ways to get the right offensive minds in the building and also have offensive minds on their coaching staff that could step in and be that next guy.
Right. I mean, to your exact point, it's interesting when you look through a lot of these defensive options that you remember that the offensive guys they hire, they don't even have to be defensive, right? You could look at Jim Harbaugh's coordinator path when it comes to offensive guys. I mean, it's hard to refute that just about anybody that Jim Harbaugh hires as his offensive coordinator ends up being a pretty good coordinator, whether it's like Greg Roman, Pep Hamilton, or the other guys that he's coached. He's got a clear eye for what he wants to hear in an offensive interview, if nothing else, right? It's not that he, quote unquote, is an offensive mind, but you still, like, if you're, I don't know, a defensive coach, I mean, you obviously have a thing or two, know a thing or two about offense because you have to stop it. Right. Mm-hmm. So you may not be a quote unquote offense guy, but you've got your own opinions. And when Vic Fangio, say, hires an offensive mind that maybe, and granted, I'm plucking somebody out with Fangio, I don't actually know enough about the Broncos staff to pretend to have an idea about what Fangio thinks of offense. But everybody puts on these defensive guys that they must be smash mouth, run the ball, protect the defense mindsets. And I just don't think that that's always true, especially nowadays in the college ranks, where a lot of the defensive head coaches are the ones going for it on fourth down, playing aggressive and trying to get into pass and PA mindsets, you know?
Well, I mean, look at Brandon Staley. I think he's a prime example of somebody that was just recently hired that was a quote-unquote defensive guy, but also has a little bit of an offensive background as a player. So, yeah, I think, again, I think a lot of it just comes down to, and I'm kind of getting out of that mindset of, you need to have a coach that can call plays, whether that's defensive coordinator, right, offensive coordinator, whatever it is. I'm actually kind of going away from that, saying get a field general, get a guy that can, you know, kind of like John Fox said, I coordinate all three positions, offensive, defensive, special teams. But you let those guys make the play calls and you focus on being a head coach. And I think that's one of the things for Matt Nagy where he's going to have to get a lot better at, right? Where I think a lot of the in-game stuff and just basically allowing himself to be the head coach and not the offensive guru, because frankly, he's not an offensive guru, but you know, I don't know. It's going to be, again, there's no real, it's kind of like the quarterback thing, right? There's no real, you know, magic thing that you can do, right, in order to find that right guy. But I do think that there are absolutely parameters that have proven to be more successful than others that need to be examined a little bit more within this hire. And, really, I think the only one to me that I'm like, man, I just can't get behind just because it feels like such a boring hire due to his, you know, his past job in Minnesota is Leslie Frazier. I can't, man. I can't do it. There's so many good defensive coordinators out there. Matt Eberflus, you know, Todd Bowles, man. There's just a ton of them. Like, right. Why Leslie Frazier? Why? I don't. I'm hoping that's just a lazy tie. I really hope that's all it is.
I hope so.
You played for the 85 Bears because that's the only thing that makes sense.
I mean, like you're saying, if to me the problem with Frazier, to pick on Frazier before we get back to the post-game piece, because we're off on the tangent everyone wants to talk about, so there's nothing wrong with that, but the problem to me with the Frazier idea is that I feel like it's just logically unsound, right? It's not the part where he would be connected to the Bears. It's that if you want the former Bear, go get Jim Harbaugh. If you want the defensive mind, I think there are better defensive minds. I mean, whether it's Todd Bowles, whether it is, his name escapes me, but it's the Bills defensive coordinator, Mayo, I think is his name.
Oh, you're talking, yeah, is it Jared Mayo.
Jared Mayo's getting ton of play recently. Yeah. And so I think that there are at least other guys that you would interview. And granted, we're not going to be in the interview room. So Leslie Frazier getting an interview, it's not like that breaks my heart, but it does feel like a lazy connection. And if we just heard them announce at 10 p.m. on Monday, Leslie Frazier's the new head coach of the Chicago Bears, it would feel that way, but I tend to doubt that's going to happen. You know?
No, well, I mean, they got to figure out what they're doing, regardless if they fire Pace or not. They got to figure out the front office first, and I think that's where, you know, I guess this will be the last thing on this. I think that's where some fans got to not put the cart before the horse. I know a lot of people are like, oh, get Vic Fangio back in the building. The Bears have got to figure out, you know, what exactly is going on within the front office. I was just looking at something. It looked like Brad Biggs just tweeted out something about
thing.
It looked like, yeah, Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace were walking out together. I don't know what that exactly what that means, but the Bears have a lot of work to do in front of them, even if they keep Ryan Pace, right? Because they got to figure out how they're going to structure the front office, what they're going to do with Pace. And then, you know, they got to find a head coach before we can even talk about coordinator hires. And then as far as Leslie Frazier goes, last thing I'll say on that, even if you want to bring in a minority hire, which is absolutely nothing wrong with that. There's a lot of great minority candidates out there right now, whether you want to go offensive or defensive. He's still, to me, he's not the best candidate. I just don't see it because really look at Tampa Bay. You could go Todd Bowles or Byron Leftwich from that. There is a ton of good coordinators and ideas and whatever else, you know, Bears connections, minority connections, defensive connections, offensive connections, whatever connection you want to make. It feels like, at least on paper, there's a lot better of options, even if you want to go with a retread. If you want to go with retread, there's plenty of those options as well. I just don't understand the Leslie Frazier love. I'm sure he's a great dude. That's just somebody I don't want to go down that road. I really hope the Bears don't either.
I'm of the same mind. And it's so awkward, too, because you talk about Ryan Pace, and I feel like the Ryan Pace conversation, for instance, is really complex one. It was a lot less complex in 2020, if I could be really candid. But in 2021, I feel like Pace knocked the draft out of the park. Granted, he had to use a little bit of future capital to get it done, but nobody's taking back the Justin Fields trade. I don't think anybody's really taking back the Tevin Jenkins trade, regardless of what people say about how much that third round pick would have helped. But you get the idea. I mean, with Larry Borum looking like at least a swing offensive tackle, rough game today, but potentially a future starter. You've got Thomas Graham, who every time we see him seems to be around the ball and sticky in coverage. That's really solid. Khalil Herbert could be the heir apparent to David Montgomery, depending on what decisions get made. Blah, blah, blah. You get the idea. Angelo Blackson, free agent signings like Akeem Hicks, the Mac trade. There are enough goods on Pace's resume for anybody to be a fan. I mean, when you're a GM for 7 years, the team is built by Ryan Pace. And if anybody out there is a Bears fan, you probably have a favorite player, and Ryan Pace probably had to do with getting him on the team, right? The trouble that
I think Pat O'Donnell's the only one that wasn't brought in by Ryan Pace.
I think you might be right.
Yeah, Pat O'Donnell, the punter. The punter's the only one that hasn't been brought in by Ryan Pace. I agree.
Mm-hmm. The trouble is, Aaron, is that I don't see a world where Ryan Pace gets extended and also gets so much leash that he can reevaluate the roster, say, we're not quite there yet, and retool towards 2023, even if that means getting even worse in 2022 with an eye on winning a Super Bowl. I can't help but worry that if Pace is still on the team, or if Pace is still running the team in a month, that that leads us back towards 9-8 at best. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. So my thought process with that is I think it depends on how you get to 9-8, right? Because obviously the Bears got a lot of work to do, but I think you can also look at how the NFC playoff picture has panned out and say that, you know, are the Bears really that, like, with a good offseason, are the Bears really that much worse than the 49ers? Are they really that much worse than the Eagles? Right. Are they really that much worse than some of these other, you know, wild card teams? And who knows? I mean, obviously, if Aaron Rodgers leaves, are they really that much worse than the Packers without Aaron Rodgers? I don't know. So, but I think the big key is how do you get there? And that's something that it's kind of one of those things where, you know, 6-11 is a lot easier to swallow when you're playing all the young guys and when you're building towards a younger off, you know, a younger core as a whole. It's not as easy to be able to swallow when you have the second oldest roster in the league and your head coach refused to play younger players all year long. And I think that that's kind of where, yes, Matt Nagy shares a lot of blame in this, but at the same time, how are the Bears as mediocre as they are with the writing has been on the wall for what it has been over the last few years? How are you the second oldest roster in the league moving into 2021? Those are the kind of things that I look at where you can say, yeah, you can point out a lot of good stuff that Ryan Pace said. And I don't think that anybody being objective can say otherwise, but I think that the pure panic that he has seen since, you know, 2018 being as good as it was. And, you know, a lot of people say, well, the first 3 years, you got to throw out his rebuild. Okay, that's fine. But he had 1 year of a contention window and things have steadily gone downhill since. And I think that that's where you have to look at it and really say, is he the one that we want leading this team moving forward that can make quality decisions within the draft? Like you pointed out, okay, I don't think there's anything wrong with trading up for Justin Fields. You know, having conviction and all that fun stuff is great. But the problem is when you turn around and you already have a light draft class and then you turn around and trade up again for Tevin Jenkins in the second round and then you don't pick again until the fifth round, this isn't a one-off. And I think that's kind of the thing that a lot of people have to understand. This isn't a one-off because if you go back to the 2019 draft, they have David Montgomery, who's a running back, and Duke Shelley, who is a replacement-level nickelback. Those are the only two guys that are on the roster that were from the 2019 draft class. That is the issue that you have when you start trading up. Look back at 2018. You know, James Daniels is about to be a free agent. He's been a pretty good player. I think you'd probably wanted a little bit more out of an interior lineman in the second, you know, in the second round. Anthony Miller is not even on the team. He was a second round pick. They gave up a second round pick in 2019 to be able to get him in 2018. So I think it's more, at least for me, the core issues and how he goes about things and how he has so much quote unquote conviction about missing's not the issue. The issue is when you throw so many resources and you're so damn wrong that it finally comes back to bite the team. And I think we've seen an accumulation of those decisions over the last few years where it's like, I just don't know from a core fundamental standpoint, if you can continue to move forward with Ryan Pace, knowing that this is just who he is.
Oh, sure. And I mean, it doesn't help anything, Aaron, that when you've got quality scheme and a quality quarterback, in this case, unfortunately, I have to reference the green and gold enemy in Wisconsin, yeah. Right?
Well, they're a really well-run organization.
You'll turn Marquez Valdes-Scantling and Alan Lazard into solid twos and threes with Cobb as an extra four that helps out. And if you shifted all those guys to Chicago, truly, I don't know how much better MVS looks than Marquise Goodwin, to use an example, right?
Yeah, I would say Alan Lazard is probably looking like Javon Wims in Chicago if he
probably,
played Chicago.
Right? Like, there is something to the idea that scheme, a number one wide receiver maybe, like Davante Adams demands so much attention on the field that I think he sticks out. But there is something, like you're saying, to the suggestion that whether it's coaching scheme, a quarterback, level up, probably both in tandem, one doesn't tend to happen without the other, that the rest of the roster will just look better when things are going well. I mean, Deebo Samuel is incredible. He is. But because he's in Shanahan's scheme, we're seeing just how versatile he is instead of saying, hey, Deebo's pretty good. I mean, there's a huge difference between the way the best can use, say, Cooper Kupp, who's quote-unquote a slot receiver and is one of the most dominant players in football, versus the way that the Bears leverage somebody like Mooney, where Mooney got 1,000 yards. He did great today. He's honestly had as good of a number or a season in 2021 as I think anybody realistically could have asked of him. Like, of course, we hope he might be even better in the future as scheme and quarterback, again, hopefully come online. But given just how poor the Bears' passing offense were, for him to get 1,000 yards, 17-game season or not, I feel like that's a real accomplishment. I don't know. It is interesting, like you're saying, Aaron, when you look around the roster, that the problem I have is more with the fact that the Bears have Alec Ogletree and Danny Trevathan as ILB 2 and 3 behind Roquan Smith, or Tashaun Gibson behind Eddie Jackson, who got mossed today. Oh, man.
Yeah, Eddie Jackson had a rough game. He had a rough game in general. He's actually been pretty damn good this year. Today was rough. That was a rough one. That was a rough one for the majority of the secondary, though, man. There was dudes running wide open the second half. It's like, did they forget that the secondary – well, I mean, they did have eight players on the field at one point, so maybe they just forgot to field the secondary on a few different plays. I don't know. I mean, you know, you just never know at this point. But, yeah, no, I get what you're saying. I don't know, man. I don't think – because that's the thing. Like, so I think the Bears are a bad football team right now, and I think they need a lot of work. But this isn't 2015. You know, this isn't 2014 transitioning into 2015 when Phil Emery and Mark Trestman are ushered out the door, and you're looking at a roster that basically needs to be fully rebuilt. You've got cancers all over your locker. You have no long-term, no long-term solution at quarterback. You don't have anything. Like, this isn't remotely close to the same situation. But I think it's going to – you have to figure out how big of a step do you think you can take next year, right? We're towards building the future, not just towards throwing these veteran stop gaps in there and hoping that you can win 8 or 9 games, but how much better can you really get moving into next year? And again, I mean, it's easy for us to look at it right now and say, you know, the Bears aren't going to be that much better than a 6-win team next year, right? It's easy to say that, but at the same time, how many people thought that the Cincinnati Bengals were going to be as good as they were and that they were going to win the NFC North? How many people thought that the Philadelphia Eagles were going to go from the disaster that they had last year? I don't know if you remember week 17 or not. They essentially threw last year's game to get a better draft pick. They fired a Super Bowl winning head coach. Everybody's like, what are they doing? And they're a 9-win team. Yeah, they're a 9-win team and they're in the playoffs. Things can change quickly. But it's the approach and how you do it that makes that means the most. And I think that's going to be the key for the Bears moving forward. They're not that far off from being a playoff team, a wild card team. They're not that far off from having a pretty quality core. But there's a lot of big decisions and a lot of big pieces that have to be added over the next few years in order for that to become a reality.
Oh, yeah. And to talk about the other elephant in the room, you mentioned records. What makes a team – I mean, the easiest thing, Aaron, that we can talk about that makes a team go from 8-8 last year to 6-11 this year, sure, quarterback change. Sure, like tumultuous differences across the roster. Sure, Bill Lazor becoming the play caller. You can blame whatever you want to. The schedule is a huge factor. The Bears played a really tough schedule this year, and they get a much easier schedule on paper so far next year, where it's less of the true blue-blooded contenders that you say. They have to play the Rams, Green Bay twice, Tampa Bay, and the Ravens all in the same season. Oh, that's not good. You know what I mean?
Well, look at the schedule construction. Home away, home away, home away, home away all season. How does that even happen, man? Yeah, no, I agree with you. You would have to think on paper because they ended up, I think, strength of schedule. I'll have to look at the end of tonight. Strength of schedule going into today, they had the third toughest schedule, and obviously part of that's because they won 6 games and they lost 11. A little bit of that, but at the same time, you can also look at some really bad teams that still had really easy strengths of schedule. So, yeah, I mean, you would have to think that the schedule is going to – there's just a lot of things working against them. But I think – I don't know how you had them. I had them at 7. I had them at 7-10 this season. So
nailed it.
They're one game off from what I expected them to be. There's not a whole lot of surprise. They're a little uglier than I thought, but there's not a whole lot of surprise. when you run it back with something that's broken, this is what happens.
Mm-hmm. I had them between a 6 and 10 win cloud, I called it, because mm-hmm. you never know how the toss-up games go. And hey, if San Francisco, Pittsburgh, and Baltimore go a different way, maybe like the luck, the team just lucks their way into 10 wins, but yeah. it didn't happen. And so, you could say that about a lot of football teams, but they lost emphatically enough times so that they were going to end up here. I know when it comes to record, Aaron, I will never stop thinking about that same 2020 team where Nick Foles and a lifeless Bears football team just got destroyed by Tennessee. That awful, awful game. That same football team won 8 games and went to the playoffs somehow. So teams like the Eagles,
speaking of schedule,
exactly. So teams like the Eagles, who, hey, the Eagles have been feisty this year. I don't want to take too much away from what they've done in Philadelphia, but it is awfully nice when you play the Giants twice. And I mean, the Bears can relate to beating a team in blue, but you get the idea. Schedules make a difference. And so the Bears, I think with this loss, they locked it in. I'm pretty sure they had it either way, but they lock in that third place finish, which is big in terms of what division they play next year. And so it should be a little softer, but like we're saying, the big change is obviously going to come with GM, head coach, and less so with Jason Peters getting out of the way, and now it's Tevin Jenkins' time. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I agree. I think, you know, obviously the schedule part, yeah, I think regardless – it was like a 99% chance that they were going to be playing the third place schedule, even if they won. Obviously, they locked it in. Really, the only thing that changed today, because I know Washington won and they were at 6 wins with the Bears, so now they moved to 7. So I think – I can't remember who the other – there was one other team that was locked in at 6 wins with the Bears as well, and that's only for draft positioning. Outside of that, yeah, it really doesn't really make a whole lot of difference, because I want to say it's the AFC South, the NFC South, and the NFC – West are the 3 third place teams that they would play next year. So obviously that's going to benefit them in some ways, but yeah, it's just sometimes things get stacked against you. This was never the Bears year. And I think that's kind of key to remember. This was never the Bears year. Obviously you'd like to see a lot of things go better than they did. But I also just, I don't know, man, like I think that the Bears have an opportunity during the offseason, over these next few weeks, over these next few months, to completely change the direction. But a lot of it's going to depend on Justin Fields, man, because Justin Fields is a good quarterback next year. And we just saw the same thing with both the Chargers and the Bengals as well. If you got a good quarterback, good young quarterback, a lot of things can change in a hurry. Perceptions can change in a hurry.
Yep, absolutely. Now, because it's a post-game podcast, Aaron, I am obligated to give out some kind of game ball. So at the end of we'll go to sponsorship break, and once we come back, let's hand some out and we'll call it a season. Sound good?
Well, let's do it.
Perfect. See you on the other side.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
And we are back with Bear With Me. I'm here with WCG Zone Aaron Lemming, and I want to convert game balls, Aaron, into something that kind of commemorates the end of the season. Let's call them thank you notes. They can be satirical. They can be serious. You can thank David Montgomery for making the season watchable. You can thank Travis Gibson for the way that he's developed. But I'll start out by thanking Andy Dalton in this specific game for reminding us that the Andy Dalton led offense was probably not going to jump out to some magical 5-3, 7-3 start, and that even though Justin Fields obviously struggled within this Matt Nagy offense, that number 14 probably wasn't some heir apparent answer that was going to fix all the Bears' problems either, because between him and Matt Nagy, this era ended with a really wonderful moment of closure that, like we talked about in the earlier part of the season, I mean, there aren't any questions left to answer, right? What a magical year that we actually got answers to everything.
Yeah. No, that's fair. So, yeah, I don't know. So am I supposed to give a game ball now?
You give out some thank you notes.
Okay, thank you. Well, so I'm going to – so my first – well, I'll be serious with this one just because I think a lot of people feel the same way. Akeem Hicks, man. It really bums me out that we didn't get to see him. It also irritates the hell out of me that Matt Nagy didn't make him a captain in last week's game that he actually played in. And then all of a sudden here we are and he's not playing again. Either way, man, that was probably, I would say, and maybe I'm wrong here, I think that might have been Ryan Pace's best free agent signing. He came in on a two-year, it was like a two-year $10 million deal. And he was fantastic. And he wasn't a given either. He was like a signing that happened, I want to say, and I could be wrong, but I want to say it was like a week or two into free agency. But either way, man, Akeem Hicks has been exactly everything and more that you could possibly ask for from any Bears player to put on the uniform. The guy was, I mean, obviously he missed 20 games over the last 3 years due to injury, but I mean, anytime he was out there, the dude was just an absolute animal. He was a fan favorite. He was a fantastically underrated defensive lineman for the majority of his time in Chicago. Unfortunately, I think it's coming to an end, and I think he's going to end up going to a contender where he can make some good money and also play for a good team next year. But if this is the end, a big thank you, seriously, to Akeem Hicks, because you have been an amazing player for the Bears. You've been somebody that has made it a joy to watch the Bears defense and a joy to watch the Bears overall. So thank you.
He absolutely did, and I'm so glad you brought that up. I mean, the fact that, look, the rotating captains thing has gotten so much play that I don't think we necessarily need to talk about it anymore. I mean, Bruce Irvin, Jermaine Ifedi got to be captains, but Akeem Hicks, not today. But but like you're saying, I mean, Hicks has been a phenomenal Chicago Bear. I think it's rare. Our own Jack Silverstein talked about this, where he talked about how once you get over about 30, 35, which I am not, but Jack is, your favorite players tend to be cemented, right? And then Akeem Hicks was the guy that broke the mold for Bears fans of all ages. And so to see him go, I mean, it's truly one of those moments where I think the football business is a bit on the cruel side sometimes because it makes too much sense. Like, my heart wants to keep him in Chicago forever, but my head knows that the money and his position, it's just not going to really work out, especially given how many games he's missed to injury. Even so, it's just so sad to see him go. I'll give out another thank you note to Darnell Mooney, because no other Bears receiver cracked 600 yards but Mooney. He was really the only shining star on a Bears receiving corps that really struggled to get open consistently. I mean, hey, credit to Cole Kmet. He's the only other receiver that broke 400 yards, finishing the year with over 564. My ESPN app hasn't updated to collect this game's stats. But Kmet and Mooney, but namely Mooney, as far as receiving talent goes, seem to be the only people that in ISO situations you could expect to get open instead of saying, oh, wow, look at that. They actually did, and ending up surprised by it, you know?
Yeah. No, I hear you. Yeah, I'm going to... This one's going to be sarcastic. Big thank you to Matt Nagy for making the development of Justin Fields in his rookie year and actually having a stud rookie year or rookie quarterback the most miserable experience on the face of the planet. I can't even begin to describe how frustrating this entire year has been. And obviously not all of it's on Matt Nagy, but the fact that Justin Fields, you know, through the injuries, through the fact that he didn't get any starting reps during training camp or the preseason, and to follow this stupid plan and then all of a sudden abandon it a game and a half into the season for Justin Fields. And I just thank you for completely ruining it. Cause I feel like even with Trubisky, there was never any worry that he was ever going to lose his job or that there was any really sabotaging going on. And I'm not saying that Nagy sabotaged anything, but what I will say is that it was a night and day difference between watching the offense when you watched Nick Foles run it and when you watched Andy Dalton run it, and the play calls that were coming in versus what we saw with with Justin Fields. So, you know, good riddance at this point, man. I cannot wait to see, because I really do think Justin Fields is going to take a huge step next year. I cannot wait to see what he's going to look like next year. But, you know, yeah, Matt Nagy, you've made this a fun experience, or what should have been a fun experience, just a completely miserable experience for most Bears fans everywhere.
I'll also throw in for the Matt Nagy thank you note. I want to make a little signature on the bottom, right, where thank you to Matt Nagy for ruining many fans' perception on fourth down aggression. Because Matt Nagy, especially over the last 2 years, got as aggressive on fourth downs, not quite as aggressive as quote-unquote the nerds want, but I feel like he started getting a nice pulse on when to go for it, when to press the issue, and his fourth down play calling has been, honestly, I would argue it might be worse than his goal line play calling. And his goal line play calling, obviously, leaves a lot to be desired, but Aaron, how many situations have we seen a huge fourth down come up for the Bears, right? Not like, oh, this is kind of a big play, they're going for it on fourth down, but like one that the whole stadium can tell that they really need it, and oh my word, the play call is nobody open, Nick Foles / Andy Dalton / Justin Fields / Mr. Trubisky running for their lives and ending up with a fail, like a fail. It's, I don't blame any of the fans that are like, just punt it there. Take the 3 points. Because the way that they tend to call plays on fourth down, it doesn't feel like a good gamble. Even though on fourth and one, for crying out loud, you just give it to your running back. You got to get it at least one out of three times, right?
Yeah, yeah. No, that was, yeah, dude, that, man, that was, he made, Matt Nagy made Andy Dalton look like a rookie quarterback today out there running for his life on those three sacks that he took on fourth down today, just purely based on the play calling, the fact that there was absolutely nothing there. Yeah, that, man, that was, it's a broken record of just the same failures over and over and over and over and over throughout, you know, multiple seasons. Thank God we don't have to watch it anymore.
He went out as we came into 2019, I believe, a 50 plus passing attempt game in a losing effort that ended up embarrassed. So
fantastic job.
Well, at least we should have something to talk about on Monday, because you gotta imagine that the head coaching start, or like the new head coach search starts soon. But do you have any final thoughts on this game or the end of the season?
You know, not really, man. I feel like, kind of like we talked about, right? I don't think, and maybe people get this by my tweets and think I, you know, think the exact opposite, but I don't think the Bears are in that bad of a spot. I think this is absolutely 100% a very critical offseason ahead. The Bears have a lot of tough decisions to make. Hopefully they'll make the right decisions, but I don't think the Bears are nearly as far off as they were coming out of 2014, moving into 2015. They don't need a full rebuild. They should have their quarterback. They have some, you know, some core pieces there. Obviously this roster needs a lot of work. They need a lot of work, on the inside of the organization. But yeah, I mean, it's just, I feel like the deck was stacked against them moving into the year. There's not a whole lot of surprises. Obviously, you'd like to see things go better in terms of their overall rookie class, in terms of playing time, Tevin Jenkins not having back surgery, Justin Fields not getting hurt, maybe getting some, you know, first-team reps in training camp and preseason and starting the season as a quarterback number one and actually, you know, not getting hurt. But all in all, I don't think there's any long-term damage down here. I think there's stuff to be excited about. And like we pointed out, man, teams turn it around every year. There's always those few surprise teams every year. So I'm not saying the Bears would be one of those teams. We've got to see how the offseason plays out. But I don't think that things are nearly as dire as maybe what some people are thinking they are. So that would be my overall thoughts on the season. The game, I have zero thoughts just because the game was meaningless. Thank God it's over. I enjoyed the game for what it was, and that's the fact that it was the last game that we'll get to see for a while from the Bears in terms of regular season. But I'm ready for Monday. I'm ready to see what all happens over the next few days, a few weeks, you know, a few months, all that. It's going to be a very busy offseason, and it should be exciting.
Yep. I mean, to your point, to finish up with my own final thoughts, there's a reason that I think many of us started the season this year. Basically, I mean, going so far as to say on podcasts, like if we could just sim the season, get to 2022, we would.
Yep.
Because it was always going to be a bit of a beatdown. Murderer's Row happened. The Bears fell to 4-10, which I don't know if anybody had them all the way down there at 4-10. But then again, I mean, maybe, right? And Justin Fields got ridiculous expectations put on him. I mean, don't get me wrong. I also thought that the Bears' rookie touchdown record wasn't going to be that hard to break. It clearly proved too much for him. But then you look at a lot of the successful quarterbacks in the NFL today, and if we were to make just slam-cut judgments on all rookies, Trevor Lawrence, bust. Justin Fields, he's a bust. Trey Lance, probably a bust. Mac Jones is the only truly good quarterback in this class, and there's just too much talent there. To me, to lump Trevor Lawrence into the bust category is to be, honestly, it would just be to put the cart way before the horse. And so I think the same applies to Justin Fields, who at the very least, to my own eye test, showed to be much more accurate than a lot of statistics seem to suggest, just given the massive amount of miscommunications, especially early in the year between Fields and his receivers. Yeah, those are going to get written down as terrible, terrible throws because the two guys ended up on different pages. But to get all this Fields tub thumping out of the way, Fields' development was the only thing that matters. He ended up with 10 to 11 games on the season, so he got quote-unquote enough experience. And now the real thing starts, right? Now the Bears get to pick a scheme that suits Fields' needs and not the other way around, necessarily, and kind of reset, which I think will do a lot of good for him because, to your point, this isn't the Emery to Pace handover where the Bears are handing nothing over. They're handing some pieces, maybe not as many as I think some people want to believe, but some pieces nevertheless. Jalen Johnson, Thomas Graham, even Eddie Jackson. There's three defensive backs, better than one, that I think like Emery handed over. You've got Roquan Smith. Angelo Blackson proved himself. I mean, I could keep going if you wanted me to, but I think most Bears fans have a decent like head on the different players that moving forward would probably be solid participants in a good Bears team. And so we'll see what happens. Crazier things have happened than a team in the Bears situation getting good soon, right? And at this point, it's just about finding the right coach to lead them forward, you know?
Yeah, no. And usually what happens on good teams is players develop better and faster. I mean, we saw that in 2018. I mean, you know, there were guys like, Adrian Amos and Nick Kwiatkowski that came out of nowhere that were replacement level starters at best for them. And all of a sudden they came out and they played really well. So you just never know. And it's the NFL is absolutely a year to year league. The Bears just have to get going in the right direction. Right now they're in the wrong direction. You wipe the slate clean, hopefully on, you know, tomorrow, and then you go from there and you just hope that you can get back on the right track. And as long as you're on the right track, as long as you're not sitting there in mediocrity, as long as you're going in the right direction, I think that it'll be a lot easier to get through next season, even if they only win seven, eight, nine games. It'll be a lot easier to go through knowing that you have a coaching staff that is actually interested in, you know, developing players, that's actually interested in the overall progression of the team, not just playing veterans for the sake of playing veterans so you can save your job or attempt to save your job.
100%. Well, Aaron, that's it on the season. Anything coming up that we should be on the lookout for? Yeah, I know you talked about some head coach research.
No, because I don't even think I'm going to do I don't even think I'm going to be able to get around to doing any sort of, article or anything for. I think basically just watch my Twitter, I guess. I mean, that's an emotional mess anyway. So you could,
aren't
you,
we all?
Yeah, exactly. I think really more than anything, man, you know, as you know, as most people who follow me know, I'm not going to source anything. I'm not going to pretend to know something I don't. I'm just going to give my overall raw thoughts on the situation, what I think they should do. And that's really about it, man. We're just going to, for the most part, I think we're all just going to have to enjoy the roller coaster of the offseason together and know that it's going to be a lot more busy than we're used to over the last few years. There's going to be a lot of fun action going on. And just because a head coach gets named doesn't mean that we don't have assistants to look forward to. You know, I think there's going to be a lot of action going on. And it's going to be fun.
And you know what? Whatever happens, it's going to be way, way, way better. Last January, Aaron, to March or to May, like, forget the fact that we landed Justin Fields, because I remember what I felt like in February, and it was like, oh gosh, if we don't get Russell Wilson, what are we going to do? Like, what on earth are the Bears going to do at quarterback? Are we going to have to watch Andy Dalton for an entire season? Are we going to draft, Kellen Mond and act like we're excited about it? Or is Davis Mills the guy? And the head coaching thing is much more fun.
Yeah, it is. It absolutely is.
And so, yeah, either way, that's the show, everybody. thanks so much. Be on the lookout for, I have to imagine that we're going to have a whole bunch of Barely a Podcasts coming. Just a thought, where we'll be spinning up quick little things about whatever the Bears just did. But of course, you're going to get Bear and Balance tomorrow. You'll get Bears Banter later this week. Bears Over Beers will do something to ring in the new year. And the Staleys, our award presentation, will be coming up soon afterwards. We'll give everybody a little bit of time for the dust to settle. But either way, a lot coming up on the Windy City Gridiron Podcasting Channel. Thanks so much for listening. And until next time, bear down, and thanks so much for bearing with us.